Okay, so I don't know when it was. I guess it was sometime last month. Sometimes the Lord will drop this phrase into my heart, and I'll just like, that sounds interesting. What are you talking about? And the phrase that dropped into my heart was environmental protection agent. You know how we have an environmental protection agency, but this was environmental protection agent. And so I'm thinking about it. I'm realizing that he's tying it into some things that I've been thinking about and kind of, you know, mulling over and having to do with how we deal with our emotions. Because, you know, we're bombarded with stuff all the time that affects us. And, you know, when our emotions get affected, it's like everything else is affected. You can't separate that out most of the time, right? And so, because really what the Lord had been saying to me over the past couple of months is just, what does spiritual maturity look like? You know? It's like, we know that it's Jesus and, you know, he's conforming us to that image, but, you know, there's specifics around that, you know what I mean? And so, this area of emotional awareness, emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is actually a area of study that, you know, psychologists and others, you know, get into. We're not going to get into that tonight, so don't worry. I'm going to get all mumbo jumbo on you. So I'm just going to share the thoughts that I had, and just you guys feel free to jump in, you know, with what the Lord is showing you, because that's how I roll. Okay. So, got to go back to the beginning. And because I want us to realize that, you know, emotions are not bad. It's not a bad thing to have emotions. I went through a period in my life where I actually thought that, you know, for whatever reason, I guess I was tired of seeing emotions be so volatile and so controlling. And so I went through a phase where it's like, I'm not going to get emotional about it. That doesn't work. And so if you go back to the beginning in Genesis chapter 2, right, where it talks about God creating everything, it says that he caused to grow every tree that is pleasing to the sight and good for food. And you know, the idea there, right, he, you know, when God created stuff, he didn't have to make it look beautiful. He could just made it look useful, you know? But when God created stuff, I mean, you know, we know what it's like to walk out into nature and just be kind of like awed, you know, by everything that God created. And so when he created Eden, he created it to be pleasing. And what is that? That's the idea there, is that it's designed to give you delight. And we've looked at stuff, right? You look at a portrait, or, you know, someone that paints something, or really anything, and sometimes you look at that, it's like, oh, that's beautiful. It just does something to you, you know, brings delight to you. And so that is a wonderful way that we can react to stuff, right? It's just to have a sense of joy and delight over it, right? And so God created the world to do that to us, to give us that sense of delight, right? And even, you know, when Eve was presented with the tree, you know, when the devil drew her attention to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, right? It says that it says here that she looked at it and it was a delight to the eyes. So it was something that was, you know, attractive. It was beautiful, right? And it was desirable to make one wise. And so the idea is that there are certain things that are good in the sense that you look at them, I want that, you know. And it's not a bad kind of a coveting or a lustful thing, but it's like, oh, I like that, I want that. And God gave us with the capacity to have that kind of a feeling. And it's good, right? And so those basic kinds of emotions of joy and delight and, you know, appreciation of stuff, You know, that's part of our original makeup. It's part of how we were originally created, because we're made in His image, and there are things that delight His heart that, you know, bring joy to Him as well. And so we're made, you know, to have that kind of an experience. And so that's good. But we all know it didn't last too long, right? We didn't. There was a problem, which was the fall. And so the first negative emotion that occurred as a result of the fall was, who knows?
Shame. Fear.
Yeah, I guess you could say shame is in there. Shame. But fear, I think, was... Who said fear? Yeah. Because when God came down to the garden, right, in Genesis 3, and he calls out, "Where are you?" Right? Adam says, "Well, I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself." So, yeah, fear maybe, you know, leading to shame or whatever. But there was this idea, you know, the first negative emotion that occurred after the fall was fear. And fear is probably the root emotion that all of us deal with in one form or another. I believe that fear is the root to every other negative emotion that's out there. You probably could get an argument from people about that, but that's just me. I believe because that was the first negative emotion. You know, you want to go back to the beginning and see, well, what happened? Well, fear entered into the human race because of the fall. That's a negative emotion, right? Then in Genesis 4, right, we have the story of Cain and Abel. They both bring their offerings. Abel's, which is, you know, he brought sheep. Cain brought crops. And God said, no, I didn't. That's not what I like. I like the other thing. So what happens? Well, Cain gets totally, you know, he gets hot. I love the Hebrew word here. It says anger, but the picture is he got hot. You know, he just was like flaming hot because Abel's sacrifice or Abel's offering was accepted and his wasn't. But here's what God said. This is really interesting. Verse 5 says that Cain became very angry and his countenance fell. His face fell. What does that sound like?
Disappointment.
Could be disappointment. What else?
Depression.
I would say depression. Huh. Yeah. So now we're starting to see some additional negative emotions coming out, right? We have anger, we have depression, you know, sadness over the situation, right? And so here's what the Lord says to him. He says, "Cain, why are you angry? And why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it." And Cain listens to that wisdom and goes, later for that, goes out and kills Abel. Because what happened? He allowed his emotions to basically control him and dictate what he was going to do. But what's interesting to me about this is that we have the first inkling from the Lord that we actually can have a choice over what our emotions do to us. Because he says to Cain, if you do well, won't your countenance be lifted? As if to say that if means, hey, buddy, you have a choice. Sin is right there. And it wants to overwhelm you, but you must master it. And how does he do that? By controlling his emotions, or controlling, better yet, how he responds to his emotions. Because, see, our responsibility, I believe what the Lord wants us to understand about this, right, is that every single one of us has a Garden of Eden, which is that inner spirit place, right? That where we're one with him, you know, the secret place where we have that ongoing constant oneness and communion with him. That's our Garden of Eden. And in the same way that the Father said to Adam, "I'm putting you in this garden And your job, Adam, is to cultivate the garden and keep it. Now, we don't think about keeping in the sense of, okay, this is a, I'm going to keep this cup. No, the word actually means to guard. It's to you know, take responsibility for something to protect it. And that was what God spoke to Adam and said, that's your job. And so each of us having this inner atmosphere, this, right, where we live and what, you know, how we respond to stuff in life, that's our garden. We're responsible for the atmosphere in our own Garden of Eden. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so when the Lord spoke to Adam, when he came down after they had eaten the fruit, and he says to Adam, where are you? Do you think God didn't know where Adam was? I mean, come on. Do you think God really didn't know where they were hiding? Of course he knew. So why would he ask the question, where are you? He asked the question for the benefit of every other person that ever lived since Adam and Eve. Because the question, where are you, is one that he absolutely wants every single one of us to answer. Not to him, because he already knows, but to ourselves.
You're not talking about like the physical location of where you are. You're talking about like the emotional.
Yeah.
Like what's going on.
Where are you? See? And so let's just take a minute and, you know, just close your eyes. And I want you to become aware of your inner state. Okay? And as you do that, I also want you to think about what are the prevalent emotions that you experience, and I'm talking about negative emotions now. What are the prevalent negative emotions that you seem to have in your life every day? So it's twofold. It's what's your inner state right now, the state of your garden. And then also, what are those prevalent negative emotions that you're constantly dealing with? You know, what Papa wants us to understand is that becoming aware of our inner state is a mark of maturity. You know, I'm sure you all can remember times when, you know, you lost it. And you didn't even realize you were losing it. It just happened. It just, like, all of a sudden those emotions happened and you lost control in some way. You know, it happens to all of us because we don't, you know, there's a time in our growth where we're not as aware of our inner state. We're not as aware of what's going on inside of us. And so becoming aware is a huge step towards spiritual maturity. Why? Because it's not the emotion, it's the response. Once I recognize, whoa, I'm starting to get really angry right now. What's going on?
What about like mindless behavior type stuff? Like stuff you do like Or even if you're partially kind of aware that you're doing something and you don't even know why.
Yeah.
I guess that's just because you're not aware of what you don't want to know.
Could be. You know, the idea of denial in terms of, you know, I got something here, but I'm not ready to face it. But the consequences of that thing, that whatever it is, a situation, an emotional whatever, it has consequences, you know.
Because I know there's been things that have affected me in the past, and I didn't realize it until later.
Sure.
How much it affected me, you know.
Sure. And that's okay, because as we grow and we recognize, man, that really messed me up. And I didn't realize it at the time. That's a step of growth right there as well. You know, because I love this about the Lord, you know, we fail forward. If I mess up, okay, what do I take away from that? You know, what's the learning? What's the wisdom? You know, and so I love that he that's how he approaches our failures. It's like, all right, you didn't disqualify yourself. You just learned something. What did you learn? Okay, it's so cool. So this idea of becoming aware of my emotional state so that I recognize that I've got a choice. I'm not a victim of circumstance or emotion or anything else that, you know what I mean, that tries to basically dictate to me, well, this is how you're going to respond. No, I have a choice in that, right? So think about, for a minute, think about what the circumstances must have been like for Jesus' disciples right before he was about to be crucified. Here they've enjoyed this amazing 3 years of miracles and all kinds of crazy stuff happening. And it's just been like, wow, what a wild ride. And it all comes to a screeching halt when Jesus says, I'm going to be crucified. They're going to kill me. Can you imagine the whiplash emotionally to go from that to this? You know what I'm saying? Imagine the fear, the confusion, all just the emotions that were being stirred up in the disciples by Jesus telling them there's some really, really bad stuff about to happen. Okay? So Jesus, in John 14, 15, and 16, he's preparing his guys for what's about to happen. And so what does he say to them? He says, John 14, 1, do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. Then he goes on to talk about the dwellings, the mansions that are, you know, that he's preparing. And then in verse 27, same thing. He says, my peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives do I give to you. Do not let your heart be troubled, nor let it be fearful. You know, the word troubled there in the Greek, it means to be agitated. You ever get agitated? Right? Distressed. Anxious. It has this picture of this inward commotion. You know what that feels like? It's like there's no peace. It's like everything's all stirred up and it's not good. It's just not good. You just like, it feels like the walls are falling in on you and everything is just, it's just bad. Right? The level of stress is just through the roof. That's the picture. Anybody ever been there? Right? Exactly. Right? It's like you just don't know where to turn. You're like, you feel like you're going to pull your hair out. That's what he's talking about here. But, you know, I think most of us are more familiar with the King James Version, which says, let not your heart be troubled. Right? Yeah. Let not your... Doesn't that sound so nice? Sounds so... Oh, it's so soothing. Let not your heart be troubled. Let me break that thing right in half, break it in pieces. Because This right here is a command. It's not some platitude, some nice phrase that he throws out to try to make you feel better. This is a command. He's saying, guys, you are not to be under the influence of circumstances and bad emotions. Do not let your heart be troubled. Do not let your heart become distressed and anxious and overwhelmed. What? What are you, crazy? Think about that. Think about yourself in the midst of those crazy situations, and all of a sudden, Jesus says, hey, I command you to stop doing that. Oh, yeah, right, Jesus. Like, I... So, what are you, crazy? You know, I'm pulling my hair out. But you feel that, right? That's the force of what he's saying. Do not let your heart be troubled. So how does that happen? Well, he gives us clues in these scriptures and leads us on a journey into a place where we're absolutely able to obey that command. Because guess what? He never commands us to do anything without first giving us what we need to do it. That's what his grace is all about. He doesn't play games with us, right? It's like, yeah, see how that works out for you. No, he gives us what we need. So what does he say? He says, don't let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. What is he saying? I've said some things to you. I've made some promises to you. I've spoken truth into your mess. What are you going to believe?
Wow, that's deep.
You're going to believe the mess? You're going to believe the situation? Or are you going to make a choice? Yeah, in the craziness, are you going to make a choice? You know what? I know what you said. And I choose to believe you right now. Right here. Right?
Okay, can I say something? But that's kind of... like, okay, he told his disciples everything that he's going to go through, he's going to crucify, right?
Right.
And I'm trying to picture myself being there, right? And I see that. And then the next thing I know, he's on the cross and they nailing him to the cross and crucifying him and even stabbing him. And how your heart not going to be, you know what I'm saying? Like, how your heart is going to not, you know, take, how are you going to take that commandment? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You're going to be, if that was me, I'd be like destroyed just to see that.
Sure.
Right? I mean, how am I going to have that peace in my heart just knowing that my God, you know,
right,
who I walked among, or he walked among us,
yeah,
was tortured like that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So how are you not going to have emotions?
Yeah.
I'm just...
okay. That's a good question. And it goes right back to the choice. See, we either believe that we really truly have a choice, or we remain victims of whatever happens to us. Can you see that? If you don't think you have a choice, then your only choice is, well, I guess I just have to put up with what the world throws at me and what happens around me. But he's saying that we have a choice. So if I'm not either seeing the choice clearly or living within the reality of a choice, then it's telling me I have an area of growth, that there's an upgrade that the Lord has for me in my experience of him. That's all it means, you know? Listen, we're all in process. We're all on a journey, and I would never want anybody to feel like they're being singled out as like, well, what's wrong with you? No, we're here trying to grow, you know, in our experience of him and what he's provided. The point is, there really is a choice, and so yeah, we could talk about all kinds of really bad situations that, you know, you've either been through or could be happening, right? We could do that. But if that's the focus and not what he's saying, then we've already lost the battle. Does that make sense? Right? So
I have another one. Can I just share something?
I think you should.
It was a sign that happened, you know, I think it was last week, but it came until this week. And I'm pretty sure y'all, it was about the little girl that she was killed, raped and killed.
Oh, yeah.
And her mother was there, and she was telling her mother to help her.
Yeah.
And through that time, just reading that, you know, I was a mess at work because I just couldn't take it out of my mind.
Yeah.
So I would just see a lot of tears, you know.
Right.
And not only that, I would go to sleep just thinking about her, you know, like, and I was asking God, cause what do you want me to do, you know? Am I supposed to intercede? But I know she's with you, but do I intercede for the parents? Because my thought was, you know, crucify her and her boyfriend for doing this to this child. And it was like that, last week and this week, like, and then with Lissandra, it was like everything kind of kicking. So is it part of like being an intercessor that you're picking that up? Or is it, because you're talking about emotions.
Sure.
Now my emotions is kicking in, right?
Yeah.
And in the process, I'm speaking to God, and, you know, Lord, okay, well, what you want me to do? How you want me to pray, you know?
Right.
But I couldn't get that girl out of my mind. I mean, I would go to sleep just thinking about her, wake up thinking about her. And it was, so, you know.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
I don't think there's nothing wrong with showing emotion, like I'm crying. Crying is a release of, you know, just a release.
Yeah.
It's very healthy, I think, actually. But I think what you're trying to say is not to stay there in a place of, you know,
right. Oh,
this is it, this is the end, or whatever. Now we have to gain, okay, God, I gotta gain back a promise. I gotta grab a word of yours. And stand on that. I cried. You know, and then I go, okay, what are we going to do?
No, it's good. So the question that you might want to look at is, you know, who is forcing you to continue to think about the little girl?
I mean, I wasn't going to bed thinking about it. It would just pop up. And
right.
I would just get up and, you know, speak to God, you know, which one to pray. I mean, my thing was, well, how am I going to pray for the girl? The girl is gone, you
right.
know, and I know that she's in heaven. So who am I supposed to pray for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, and then the thing is that saying, it was like a replay. You know, she's crying out for her mother. You know, her mother's there. She's telling her mom, help me, help me. And the girl is getting raped and, you know, and killed in front of her parents, you know?
I know.
So, ooh.
Yeah.
But you know what, Rosa, I had a similar situation. I was telling Russ about it. And in this case, it was also a rape, but it was a baby. And like for me, it was like, the heck is wrong with people?
Yeah.
And my initial reaction was the same. It was like, you know, kill the mom and kill the other two that were involved with this, right? And, you know, I was like, you know, I was sad for the baby, but I knew that, you know, the baby was with Jesus. And I was like, you know, distraught about the whole thing for like a month. And then, like, it was a process because God was, like, showing me, in the end, he showed me, even if the baby survived, she would have been okay because I would have helped her.
Mm-hmm.
And she would have used that to help others, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Because he's like, you know, nothing that happens to you is going to go unused. And it's nothing that I can't redeem about it, right? So that was that. And then he actually showed me that I needed to pray for the mom. Because, you know, she's young.
Yeah.
She's going to get pregnant again.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And I prayed for the, you know, the guys that, you know, did this to the baby. And I was like, you love them too. You know what I mean? So it was, like, horrible to, like, I still get, like, distraught about stories like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now I see it from a different perspective because he's shown me, like, these people need to be, you know, shown mercy and grace just like I've given you mercy and grace because they need me to be in their life so they don't continue doing this stuff.
Right. That's good.
I think with this one is so different because, you know, the girls, so, you know, I don't know how they got the story, but she actually was asking for help, right? All the other time when something that happened, I could pray. You know, that God would, you know, touch them, the person that did this to the child. And even intercede before it happened to take the thought of the enemy putting in the parents or the boyfriend or whatever, whoever, you know, to remove those stones before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But this time, like, this really hit hard. Mm-hmm. This was like, and all I could think about, man, just crucify or burn him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe because I'm thinking that way and not praying for mercy and grace for them, you know, God, mm-hmm. help them. I just look, I'm sorry, I can't pray for them. So I don't know if that's it, you know what I'm saying? Now that you said that, I don't know if that's it, but
yeah.
It's been like, oh my God.
Sure. Okay, well, I mean, hopefully by the time we're done here, you know, you'll have kind of a better understanding of what to do in those
yeah.
kinds of situations. Because, I mean, again, it's not wrong. Your reaction to bad stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, the way we react, if you don't react, there's something wrong. I mean, those things are bad. Absolutely. So Jesus basically tells his guys, look, you have a choice here. You can either believe the circumstances or you can believe what I've promised you, right? Then he goes on in verse 27, and he says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. So he's giving them something tangible, something real, which is his peace. Now, in order to experience God's peace, you really have to have something happen to you in order to access that. Because it's not just a word, right? It's a reality. And so there's got to be a way for us to actually experience his peace in the midst of these things. And the clue that he gives us, I believe, is in the last passage that I want to look at, which is, before I get there, John 15:11, he says, these things I have spoken to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made full. So here's Jesus saying to us, I have wonderful emotions that I want you guys to experience. My peace, my joy, I want to make all that full in you, right? So how does that work? Well, John 16, this is what he says to them. Truly, truly, I say to you that you will weep and lament. Sounds like you, Rosa, right? You will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. He's talking about his crucifixion. You will grieve, but your grief will be turned into joy. And here's this verse many of you can identify with. Whenever a woman is in labor, she has pain because her hour has come. But when she gives birth to the child, she no longer remembers the anguish because of the joy that a child has been born into the world. Can I get an amen,
amen.
From
those of you?
All right. So we understand that that's a powerful analogy of something that Jesus wants us to understand about this. Therefore, you too have grief now, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and no one will take your joy away from you. What is he saying? The key in all of this, when I recognize my emotional state, my inner state, and I recognize that I am getting stirred up in some kind of way emotionally, and I recognize that and I realize I have a choice, he says, come to me. Come into my presence, because he's already come, right? He's already, you know what I mean? It's like, this was future tense. I will see you again.
Mm-hmm.
So the again is here and now. It's constant. It's 24/7. I've access to him, his presence, so that I can say, okay, here I am. Mm-hmm. I give this to you. What do you have for me in exchange? What do you have for me in exchange? Oh, nothing. Just my peace. Just my joy. Just me. There's an encounter, an invitation to encounter in every situation where you recognize your inner state has left that ideal state of peace and joy and love, everything that is ours in Christ. When you recognize that your garden's been compromised because the enemies come in or some of the things happened to try to steal what is yours, right? You get to make a choice. I get to make a choice about how I'm going to respond to that. Mm-hmm. And the more aware you become of your inner state, of your emotional condition, I just love this. The more you have opportunities for encounter. Think about your triggers. What triggers you? What are the things that absolutely trigger you to get into a bad mood, or to get angry, or to get frustrated, or to get upset, or whatever, stressed? What are the triggers? Becoming aware of your triggers means you never even have to go there. Oh, I see what you're doing. I see what's going on here. You're trying to mess my Eden. You're trying to take me out of my place of oneness with Him. I mean, we never lose the oneness, but you know what? We act like it. I mean, come on. I mean, it's like, oh, wow. I think I'm just going to lose my salvation for a minute because I'm upset. You know? And so, He says to them, these things I've spoken to you, right? Believing what He says. So that in me, you may have peace. In the world you have tribulation, but take courage, I've overcome the world. So the invitation is, I'm in you, you're in me. You see what's happening. You see how I'm getting stirred up about this. And I don't want to. You can absolutely say, I don't want to. I don't want to lose my joy, my peace, right? Do you realize that peace is the end result of experiencing the perfect love of the Father? When you're in that peace of Christ, you are basically in a place where you know that He loves you and He's never going to let stuff get in the way of you and Him. Perfect love, what? Casts out fear. So if I still have fear in my life, it just means I need a greater encounter of His perfect love. Because that's what I'm lacking. In some way, I'm questioning, do you really love me? Because I have this idea of an outcome that's not so good, that's not very positive. I think that's what might happen here. And so I have fear. Right? I'm putting faith in something that is not in His heart for me. That's really what fear is. Is I'm actually believing that something's going to happen that's not in His heart for me. And so I've got to be able to say, Lord, come, overwhelm me with Your love again. We can never, ever experience it all. Yet He says, I want you to try. You know, I want you to know what is the height, depth, length, and breadth of my love, even though it's beyond comprehension. Try me. See how far you can go in this. And so what I want to just give you a chance to do tonight is pick one of those negatives that you constantly are dealing with in your life, you know, and if you want, just put on some music and just begin to just encounter Him in that and just say, Lord, I want to give this to You right now, because I recognize that this thing has been just too much in my life. And just allow Him to take it. And then ask him specifically, what do you have for me in exchange? Is that good? Get in exchange. You got some peace? Yeah. A double portion. That's good. Are you going to become an environmental protection agent?
I know for me, what I heard Jesus said was that he came for the sick. So those two, the parent and the boyfriend, they are sick in the mind. So
yeah.
He didn't just came for the people that are healthy. He came for those who are sick.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I have to, you know, forgive and let God work in them.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lord.
Absolutely. Yeah. So now when that happens again, you'll be able to... You'll be able to do that and save yourself unnecessary anguish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it was. I wasn't giving them to God. Like,
right.
He has to work in them. They have to be forgiven, mercy and grace upon them.
Right.
And I wasn't giving that. I just want to see them pay.
Your tip off was the fact that you wanted to see them punished.
Right.
And that's where the negative emotion was rising up in you. Which, I mean, listen, I get that. You know, a child abuser or anything like that, you know, give me my gun. You know, I mean...
But it's not up to us.
But it's not up to us, exactly, yeah.
So I heard him clearly. Tonight, yeah. He said he didn't come just for the, you know,
yeah.
He came for the sick.
Yeah, that's good.
I said, wow. Okay.
Yeah, wow, that is.
That was already nuts.
Yeah. 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 Sure. Yeah, it's in Proverbs, right? For from your heart flow the springs of life. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's knowing how do I respond to this. You know, yeah. Anybody else want to share?
Also coping, because we use coping as a way of
coping.
Coping, like when you cope, you just process. But you're not processing. You're coping with it.
Yeah.
You're accepting whatever emotion you have.
Yeah. Right.
Still stays there.
Right. Well, and if you internalize it, in other words, you know, I'm not going to let it out. It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is that our emotional state absolutely affects our physical well-being. So that, you know, if I'm getting sick a lot or whatever, my body is absolutely being affected by, you know, what my emotional inner state is all about.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess that's where all the headaches was coming in, all my back pain.
Really?
Yeah, because
wow.
I was going through that, right? I mean, it was like a whole week I was having headaches. And
yeah.
Yesterday, I was having a whole bunch of back pains. And
yeah.
Couldn't figure out, you know.
Wow. That's amazing. See, that right there.
That was...
Yep.
And I know it was, because, you know, I know God has me interceding for people, and I know that, because I have seen them in my house, and he wakes me up in the middle of the night and pray, and it'd be a child,
yep.
You know? And I do, I intercede, it don't bother me, I intercede.
Yeah.
And even when I hear other kids, you know, it do hurt me, and I cry when I hear somebody, child dying in the hand of a parent or whatever, but this one, it just messed me up. It just messed me up completely.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out, you know, and I'm telling the Lord, you know,
yeah.
Well, she's with you, you know, who am I interceding for?
Mm.
And like Jesus said tonight, you know, he came for the sick.
Right.
You know, they did it, but they sick, you know.
Yeah.
And they still, like she said, they still child of God.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't let that soak in.
Yeah.
Until now.
Yeah. Cool.
I just want to say, like, as an intercessor, it's like when you go into that place where the Lord needs you to go and you're praying, or you don't know who to pray for, or an assignment, sometimes you're picking up in your spirit the very heart of God and that holy anger that he has towards
what has taken place. And of course, he's in control of everything and things happen. But as intercessors, to me, I think that the deeper you go, the deeper you go into the heart of God, the deeper you experience the things that causes him to hurt. Because we can hurt God with things that we do, you know?
Sure.
He's not happy with the way things are. You understand what I'm saying? And I think that as intercessors, at times we go there. We go into that place, and the thing that that we have to remember is not to stay there.
Right.
Not to stay there. And sometimes, definitely the emotions.
Yeah.
But you can't let the emotions overtake you. You got to know how, when to get, you know, out.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
So, because that when you were saying that, I was picking up in my spirit that you was experiencing an anger that God had because of what happened to this child. But at the same token, that even though he has an anger concerning that, he's still concerned about those souls, the two that are responsible for what the child went through.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know, that's just what I have picked up in my spirit.
And that's good. Let me stretch you a little bit. No, because I've grappled with that. And what I understand now, based on the Word of God, God doesn't get angry at sin anymore. Because he poured out all of his wrath on Christ. All of the wrath of God for sin was poured out on Jesus. And so his wrath has been satisfied. When John wrote in his letter about how, you know, Jesus was the sacrifice for the sins of all, and you know, in the world, right? He used this really crazy big theological word called propitiation. He used the propitiation, and the meaning of that word is judicial satisfaction. So if God's justice was satisfied, his wrath was satisfied against sin by the sacrifice of Christ, he no longer has any wrath for sin because it's been satisfied. The only time it's going to come back is on the very last day of judgment, when his wrath is going to be meted out in terms of that final judgment. So when I think about, you know, some of the most heinous of sins and crimes and whatever else that are out there, where if it was me, I would be like, you know, see what I'm saying? It's like God, if he was to get angry, his anger would be fighting against his love and his grace, because anger wants to punish. Anger, you know, even righteous indignation is going to lead towards some kind of consequence that needs to be meted out. You need to do, you know what I'm saying? And he's not doing that now. What he's doing is, as we all can attest to, he's saying, hey, would you stop being stupid? I'd like to give you some wisdom. Really? That's how he's trying to deal with us right now. It's like, I got wisdom here. Hello? I know the best way to live. Would you let me show you? That's grace in action, right? That's how he wants to raise us up and grow us up. So what I've learned is that if there's anger in me towards something, that's my anger, not his. And it's, but you know what? It set me free. Because now I can, again, respond and say, okay, Papa, I'm angry. What's getting me angry here? Right? And it's usually because I really, really hate what somebody did. And instead of just hating the sin, I start to hate them. I start to get angry at them.
That's what's happening.
And that's what you were experiencing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You just wanted to take a baseball bat and go... I know, right? Give me a big knife or whatever. Yeah, and that's what happens. That's our humanity. That's, you know, righteous indignation is okay as long as you don't stay there. Because it will absolutely make you, you know, want to hurt or punish, really. You know, it has punishment as its goal. You deserve, you know. And I'm just the cop to give it to you.
Well, I have to say, I thank you so much for being here today and bringing that up, because I had no intention. That wasn't even in my mind to share, honestly. You know, I was here, you know, like we normally do, enjoy it, you know. But when you started speaking, it just something surfaced up and I had to share. So
yeah.
I thank you for that, else it would have never surfaced.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Because I've been having this experience in my life, and I asked the Lord, I said, am I just being stupid, or is this you showing me a new way of
It's a great question.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, when you say, when somebody does something, and, you know, you're like, why would you even do that?
Yeah.
Why would you even say that?
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
And so I go through my conversation with him, and I'm like, I didn't like that. I thought it was stupid. And then I'm like, fine, I'll forgive him, and all's well. And I come back, and I say to the person, everything's fine. You know, like, I didn't like that, but we're good.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, where's the difference? Where's that fine line where it's like, okay, you're showing God's love and mercy for that person.
Right.
Whoever it is. And where's that line of, like, I'm just being retarded now because I'm just letting you walk all over me.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Were you hearing Gary's book?
Yeah.
He was talking about, like, that whole... That's like a backhanded slap. I think if someone... You don't let somebody step over you. That's not what that's about. The whole giving the right cheek, that was about, like... that was, like, public... almost like a public humiliation type of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's more like what that was gearing at. We're not supposed, a lot of, and he was speaking about, like, a lot of times we think, oh, we're supposed to be like, we almost think like we have to like let everything go. And that's not what it's about. Like, we can, you know, if we don't like something, we can make that clear. Mm-hmm. You know, you can forgive them, but you don't have to do that again either. Maybe
that's what boundaries
come
into play.
There you go.
Boundaries. Mm. I am not going to allow this once. And you are not to speak to me in that manner again. You are not to treat me in that manner again. And this is the last one that you will. That's your boundary. It's not, and you can't let it continue because then you're just okaying it.
Right.
So one time, hey, I understand, twice, but the third time, the boundary, you know, you have your way of thinking, but I
don't allow you to offend me or annoy me or even get me upset with your opinion. This is the boundary
I have.
You said
boundary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
you step first
in, you know,
that
you can't do this.
So
it's
my parents, so.
Yeah.
And
you tell them.
I
mean,
it's
that's hard.
I honor you, but at the same time, it's like, you know.
No, you said
you don't.
Do not allow. Yeah. And it doesn't matter who it is. Because that's what we as Spanish people, you're supposed to take it and suck it up. No. It doesn't matter who it is. You said, look, I'm sorry, I understand what you're saying, but you can't talk to me like this. It's not, you're not allowed to. I love you, but you're not allowed to.
And you know, see that? It's actually the loving thing to do.
To let them know.
To let them know, because there's a blind spot there. That they just like they don't realize, well, you know, I can say whatever I want because you're my daughter. Say, well, I'm an adult now, and yes, I'm your daughter, but, you know.
Yeah.
And so you let them know the boundary. And let's say they continue to violate the boundary. What do you do then?
Right.
What do you do then? I'm like, yeah, she's asking, what do you do?
That could be.
This is where it gets interesting. You look at them, say, I love you, but I told you, you can't talk to me like that, and you walk out.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's sometimes the only thing that finally, you know, I guess she really means it. You know, and you're not being disrespectful. You're, you know, you're saying, oh, hey, you know what, I love
you.
Huh? Yeah, what she said. Yeah, that's tough. Good. But and that's important to pay attention to. If you find that the Lord is bringing something around frequently, that's an invitation to take responsibility in some way over that particular. It's an assignment, exactly. And Amelia, you just reminded me of something else too, as to why it's important for us to really get a handle on our emotional state. The enemy loves to get in the way of your assignments by stirring up problems between people. If God wants you to touch somebody, right, wants to use you to speak to somebody, I promise you, they're going to treat you like crap. Because that's how the devil knows. If I can get you stirred up, get you angry at this person, you're useless to the kingdom. You know? And so I see it happen time after time after time, that the very people you're called to reach and touch and have an influence over, the enemy will invariably do something through them that will so piss you off that you never want to talk to them again. And so it becomes an issue of, okay, how am I going to respond to this mess?
Then you get offended.
Right.
And you don't want to deal with them.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he loves to do that because he doesn't want you to be. Yeah. Well, I'm done. Stick a fork in me. I'm done.
Well, turn around the other side. So we can